Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, MOTAT.
Jurisdiction there of science discussion, or other discussion for that matter.
Indeed.
What is going on, Alan?
Well, this is kind of interesting because just sort of having a nosy through all of the news websites and stuff, and this one sort of stuck out is the Auckland University Media Policy. And that has sort of hit the headlines of recent times because it's kind of being, let's say, reinstated, I guess. It's always been there. I think people have been ignoring it a bit. But then there was an example of an undergrad student who at Auckland who made some sort of nasty comments or whatever in an overseas publication or something and said that he was an Auckland University student and stuff like that. And so I think this has caused the people upstairs to have a look at their current media policy, which as I understand it has always sort of been there.
But not so much enforced. Perhaps.
But not so much enforced, yeah. And so now they have extended it to students as well. So students are going to be covered by this. So in a nutshell...
Yeah, what is the policy?
So in a nutshell, public comments concerning area of expertise. So you can make public comments as long as you're talking about your particular area of expertise. But if you're making comments to the media or something like that in areas that are not within your expertise, then you have to do that as a private individual, okay?
Like you don't get to reference the University of Auckland as your employer or your...
No, that's the thing. You're not even allowed to use your university honorific or title. So, you know, you couldn't say you're a professor. Yeah, indeed. And so as an expert, you can make a statement to reporters or public. But if you do that, you've got to make it clear that the statements or communications, quote unquote, reflect their expert view rather than representing an official university position. Okay, so that's the first one. And then if you're outside your research area, then you're not allowed to use your university honorific or title, and you're not allowed to use university stationery or email address.
Right, okay.
And so now the university are applying this to students as well.
How does that work? What are the students going to say?
Well, a student, you know, could say that they're a PhD student at the University of Auckland, or something like that. So, and boy, this opens a can of worms.
Well, yeah. So sounds like a crackdown. But when I first heard of that, I thought of the likes of people like perhaps Don Brash, for example, who often is brought on to shows to talk about issues around Te Reo Māori, for example, which is obviously not his expertise, right?
Yeah, yep.
So what happens there? This probably applies in that sense.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, okay, well, let's look at Dear Science, for example. Yep, let's use Dear Science okay. as a classic example of this shit. Look, if we had to get experts in on all the stories that I talk about, you know, you'd have a line stretching outside your door, because I'll be the first to admit that I am by no means an expert in everything that I pontificate about on this show.
And we'd probably also have to ring people because they're always overseas.
Exactly, okay. So my area of expertise is a very, very narrow area of chemistry, basically. However, I would maintain that I'm a scientist, and I would maintain that I probably know enough about science, you know, in general, as hopefully I demonstrate here, that I can sort of talk sensibly or knowledgeably about science. So I think the question that one of the Auckland staff, Sean Hendy, so Professor Sean Hendy, who is a physicist here and who's written a book on this sort of stuff about, you know, about academics
expressing views,
talking about things, et cetera, et cetera. And he was sort of saying, you know, well, where do people's areas of expertise begin and end?
Exactly. That sounds like, how do you even monitor this or regulate it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's extraordinarily difficult to do that. If you're going to sort of set a line in the sand and say, right, you're not allowed to go beyond that, and that's your area of expertise and you can't go beyond that, where does that stop? Am I an expert in science, or am I an expert in only chemistry? Or is it somewhere in between? Where does it begin? Where does it end? Now, having said that, I'm not bound by this because I'm at Auckland University of Technology.
I was going to say, do we have to stop saying Dear Science with AUT's Alan Blackburn? But no, because you're AUT, so it's all right.
Now, having said that, I wouldn't have a clue what AUT's policy was. But, again, they seem happy for me to go on air and, you know, talk about stuff.
Right.
So
Because there's also, I suppose, in this context, perhaps not for my example with Don Brash, but this context, there is a benefit to the public, right?
And well, I would hope
you'd
so.
You'd hope so.
I would hope
of
so.
Course,
that's
but
the
in,
whole point of
in the
science.
Sense that you are communicating possibly difficult scientific issues mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. content
yep.
to me, who has no idea about these things, it's been a benefit to me, okay, and you'd hope again to the public.
And again, sort of one of the things about Dear Science is that hopefully it acts against the disinformation that goes on in certain sections of the media and stuff. And you know, somebody has to be the opposing view to all of the crap that's spouted by, you know, different people. So hopefully that is what this does. But again, as I say, I'm not an expert in everything that I talk about.
What? I know that we don't usually make judgment or speculate. It's just science.
God forbid, yes.
But why would the government, the university be doing this?
Well, presumably to stop people talking about contentious matters. And I guess probably with something like coronavirus, which ironically we're going to be talking about next, mm-hmm. You don't want people giving bad advice, do you?
No.
Okay, now, obviously if you preface, if I preface something by saying, I'm a professor, here's what I know about coronavirus, people are probably going to take it a damn sight more seriously
than
if I'm just Joe Bloggs off the street talking about coronavirus as a private individual. And so I can see the danger in that. You know, we don't know everything. Academics by no means know everything. Now, again, that's fine provided you stick to sort of what you know about. But I think this whole drawing a line in the sand is extremely dangerous, very, very dangerous. And so, you know, this is causing some concern, I think, among the academics at Auckland.
As it would, I think.
This is kind of relevant. There was a wonderful interview with Jurgen Klopp, so the Liverpool manager, online, sort of about Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, last week.
Liverpool football.
And somebody asked him about the coronavirus.
Oh.
And he said, what the hell are you asking me about the coronavirus
for? Good
answer. I'm a football manager. I know nothing about this.
Right.
Next question. And look it up if you will, because it's an absolutely superb answer. You know, he was speaking so much common sense. And then you get Nigel bloody Farage being interviewed by the BBC about coronavirus, like yesterday
who
or the day before.
Who will happily answer.
Who hasn't got any bloody expertise or anything about coronavirus. So why would anybody listen to him? But he's on the BBC, so it must be
fine.
It's not fine.
That onus also kind of sits on the person providing the expertise anyway, right? To also know their limits and to
I mean, I'm not going to come on this show and give sort of my opinions on finance because I don't know the first bloody thing about economics.
But people, I suppose Nigel Farage thinks that what he has to say might be of some use. Is that what
you
mean?
Okay, I would gradually admit he might know more about finance than I do.
When it comes to coronavirus, though. This is, going into the depths of the media and media responsibilities about actually... what questions we're asking and who we're asking to.
And again, often the media are just looking for anybody who can offer an opinion, you know. And, you know, if they come with a title or whatever, then so much the better. But, you know, they've got to be careful with the people that they go to ask for comment. And,
agreed.
You know, if there's stuff that I get approached about that I don't know about, I will say I don't know about it. And I'm not comfortable talking about that. And I think all of this should be self-regulating, I would have thought, you know, especially with contentious issues because... You know, once it's out there, then, you know, what you say is gospel to a certain extent if you've got that whole academic stuff behind you, okay?
Yeah.
So the academic gravitas, if you want to call it that. Mm. So I can kind of see both sides of this, I'd have to say, but I think it's a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
And remember, universities, it's enshrined in the law that we're meant to be critic and conscience
exactly.
of society.
Exactly. When is that even, you know, we have to make sure that that's in there.
Yeah, yeah.
We should keep monitoring this, I suppose.
It'd be interesting to see where this goes, if anywhere. So, yeah, as I say, it has made the news sort of in the last week.
And if people start popping up on the news with private individual as their title, as opposed to something
indeed,
else.
Indeed, yes. Yeah,
okay, we're fast running out of time,
let's
touch on hand washing.
Okay.
Somebody actually has texted in saying, excuse me, is coronavirus man-made or naturally occurring?
Okay, I do not have sufficient expertise in that, but I would be very, very amazed if it was not naturally occurring.
There you go.
So yeah, that's my opinion. Now, okay, so I'm not an expert on coronavirus, but what I can talk about is hand washing and why hand washing with soap and water is better than using your antibacterial stuff or, you know, the sort of alcohol-based things. So we need to know what a virus looks like. And a virus basically is surrounded by a big ball of grease. That's basically what surrounds it. That's what keeps it sort of safe and viable and everything so it can go on to infect. Okay. And so this is why it can sort of live on surfaces and stuff like that for some amount of time. Okay, like surfaces like your skin and things like that, which you certainly don't want it on. So, as I say, it's pretty much surrounded by a big ball of grease.
Mm-hmm.
And grease molecules of grease are big, long molecules that have got lots and lots and lots and lots of carbon atoms in them, basically. That's essentially what grease is. Okay, and so around these virus molecules, there are things called lipid bilayers. Okay, which again is just fancy for big ball of grease, essentially. Now, if you want to disrupt a virus, the thing that you got to do is get rid of that grease covering. And if you do that, then basically, once that is gone, you render the virus non-viable, and it's not going to sort of.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what's soap? How does soap work? Soap, okay, so we know that if you try and wash your hands in water to get rid of grease, it's not going to work. Your greasy hands ain't going to work. You need soap.
Yep.
Why does soap work? Okay, soap works because it likes the water and it likes the grease.
Ah.
Okay, so we can think of a soap molecule as being made up of two parts, okay? So the first part is the greasy bit. So soap molecules have greasy bits, big, long, 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 long chains of carbon atoms.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of those chains, they've got bits that like water, okay? So one bit that likes the water, we call those polar bits.
Yep.
And then we call them nonpolar. So they've got polar heads and nonpolar tails. And so you've got these molecules where one bit likes the water and the other bit likes the grease. And so essentially a soap molecule works by taking the grease into water, by solubilizing the grease through that polar head group that wants to be in the water. It wants to be in the water. The grease wants to be sort of in the grease, but it gets pulled into the water and it gets dissolved like that.
Brilliant.
And so soap, this is why soap is going to be more effective to get rid of these viruses and stuff like that, because soap is made up of these water loving and water hating bits. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a really, really nice example of chemistry. So this is good solid chemistry at its absolute core.
Brilliant.
Now, if you go to the sort of the gels and stuff like that, I see those sort of popping up everywhere now, and they are based on ethanol. Essentially. Now, ethanol is okay because it's got a bit that likes the water and a bit that likes the grease, so an ethanol molecule. However, the bit that likes the grease, it's not very long.
Right.
Okay, it's not a long carbon chain. It's only got two carbon atoms in it. It's not 12, 14, 16 like these sort of molecules that you get in soap. And so, yes, it'll do the job, but it won't do it as well as soap will do it. Okay.
What I've seen in some bathrooms is soap, obviously, because you have that there, and then also hand sanitizer. And I'm like, why do we have the hand sanitizer after just washing my hands?
I think that's probably
Is that doubly effective or
overkill? I would say the soap and water is the most effective. If you're at all concerned about this,
soap and water, but then you have to open the bathroom door to get out.
Exactly.
So maybe you take the hand sanitizer with you, so that once you've opened the door afterward and after you've washed your hands and you're outside the door, now you can hand sanitize it just for the extra.
Yeah, no,
bits.
Fair. Yeah, or you just go to good bathrooms that got automatic doors.
Right. Oh yeah, because they've all got automatic doors. Okay, somebody has texted in,
why does dirt like grease? Again, it'll be the same sort of thing. It's all to do with its molecular structure. If it's got these long carbon chains in it, then like likes like, essentially.
Right.
And opposites don't attract in this case. So, yeah, you're looking for like kind of molecules. They'll get together with like kind of molecules.
Okay, a bit of a difficult question for you. Geez. In a universe ruled by cause and effect, how does science explain the existence of consciousness and the question of existence beyond the physical? Cheers, Peter. More freedom, less government.
And you expect an answer on that in 5 seconds?
5 seconds, yeah. You're fast running out of time, like I said. How about you think about that one?
I will have a long think
Bring
about that one.
Bring it back in
yes.
2 weeks.
Yes.
All right, Peter, yes. You have to tune in 2 weeks. Do you want to quickly, or should we leave the colour blind?
We can probably, because you're itching to go to Western Sahara. I know. Which okay, is very Alan, interesting. The whole phosphate thing. It's chemistry.
Chemistry, it is. Absolutely. Okay, yes. Well, thank you so much, Alan. It's great to have
Always
you in the studio.
Always a pleasure. Okay.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
This is what you know.